Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. It's good to be here with you once again at OC Talk Radio. Now, today's show will be a bit different from our normal interview format. Today, I want to talk about how to begin saving the lives of more than 800,000 children under five worldwide. Although my focus will be on the country of Uganda, which I have worked with for the last 3 years, it will impact the entire world. Now, what got me thinking on this, I've been working on this program that's called WASH, and I'll talk more about it later. But last night, I was watching a documentary on Netflix that's titled Decoding Bill's Brain, which is all about Bill Gates, and it was really well done. And while I thought the documentary would be simply kind of an overview on Bill Gates' accomplishment and his neural processes, the documentary turned out to be quite different. About half the show was indeed on how Bill thinks and how he processes data and what he does, especially in the Gates Foundation. But the other half of the show was about a subject that turns out to be very dear to me personally, and that is the subject of diarrhea and infant mortality, which is a primary focus of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Bill Gates, who seems to read about 15 books a week, discovered that diarrhea, now check this out, that diarrhea kills approximately 2,200 children every day, more than AIDS, malaria, and measles combined. That comes to a grand total of just over 800,000 children every day, every year, that die due to diarrhea. 800,000 children die to diarrhea. Now, when Bill Gates discovered this, he immediately made solving the problem of diarrhea a primary goal of the Gates Foundation. To add to this crisis, it is found that people also infected with AIDS, which is quite common in Africa, are 11 times more susceptible to diarrhea than those not infected. So we're just dealing in very, very terrible conditions. As I stated, this is a most important issue for me personally because my job description with Wells of Life puts me in charge of our operations with the primary focus of adding access, providing access to clean water as well as sanitation and hygiene, which is known in the industry and in philanthropy as WASH. Spelled exactly as it sounds, WASH, and it stands for water, sanitation, and hygiene. And I'll have much to say on WASH later in the show because it is where I focus so much of my attention. So why water and WASH? It's because the number one cause of diarrhea is due to waterborne diseases, including clean water, including access to clean water, as well as an emphasis on sanitation and hygiene. In Uganda, 1 in 5 children under five, or 20% of children under five, will die due to waterborne diseases, primarily diarrhea. 20% of children under five will die of diarrhea. In Uganda, nearly 11,000 children died of diarrhea. That number, that was in 2011. Now, the number is substantially higher today because of the massive population growth, population increase in Uganda. Today, the population of Uganda is approximately 44 million. And check this out, 50% of the people are under the age of 15. It is growing. Uganda has been ranked as the world's fastest growing population with an average of 3.3% growth annually. That by 2025, I think I read they'll have 58 million people in this country. I don't know. It's probably the size of Arizona, maybe larger. You know, I could be really off on that. I'm just guessing, thinking maps right now. But obviously, such a rapid population growth radically impacts the number of infants, therefore impacting the number of children that are susceptible to diseases caused by unclean water and improper sanitation and hygiene. Now, before I begin the goal of Wells of Life to bring water sanitation and hygiene to Uganda, let's all make sure we understand what diarrhea is and how it is contracted. Thanks to easily obtained medication and mostly sanitary conditions, countries like the United States don't even consider the disease of diarrhea as serious, let alone fatal. You know, we all have our problem with diarrhea. We take a, what pill do we take, Paul?
For diarrhea?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, well, there is a pill, you know, that we can take that fix it all up. But diarrhea, fundamentally, is simply loose and watery bowel movements that lead to fatal dehydration when the causes are not dealt with. When you just have a continual diarrhea, you end up with dehydration and die of dehydration. That leads us to discuss our Wells of Life WASH program. In late 2018, we began a pilot for our WASH program, and then in 2019, we have 22 programs in progress, two schools and 20 communities, ranging from 500 people to 1,000 people. What I would like to do is explain to you why we are doing WASH and what WASH is, because I think it will be quite fascinating. We are working, first of all, the Gates Foundation, which I am just enamored with, that they are doing such great work, works in high population areas, and they have discovered ways, believe it or not, that they can take shit and turn it into water. And they use it by solar panels and by when they burn the fecal matter, it turns into steam, which continues the process. So there's no costs involved in power. It is all environmental friendly in the power, and it will actually turn fecal matter into drinking water. And there was pictures of Bill Gates drinking the water right as it came out of this. He has also developed what he wants to do. He realizes that not every community is a large city, so he wants to do it for local communities. And he has built a toilet that does exactly the same thing. The toilet will take fecal matter, go through this process in the toilet, and come out as drinking water. And they will just, you know, continue to use the process. The problem is, however, the prototype is $50,000. So he wants to get the cost down to $500, which will be affordable in several communities. But in the communities, I think, that are most susceptible to diarrhea and these waterborne diseases, there is no way in the world they can afford $50 for a toilet when you consider they're all working under the poverty level, which is less than $2 a day is their annual, that's their daily income. And that is why we have the WASH program. And the WASH program is a culture change program that will eliminate diarrhea if the community can participate and can enact the programs that we want to put in place. And I would like to describe the programs because I think they're quite fascinating, and it is highly impactful. Now, this will probably not be as long a podcast as normal, but I think it's it's extremely important. Now, let's talk about the WASH program in general. The program consists of getting access to clean water. It is about learning proper sanitation and proper hygiene. And there is a major problem with this, and that is we're not talking about just getting people to change some of their ways. We're talking about total culture change, such as when we deal with sanitation, we're dealing with open defecation. People have been defecating in the woods their entire life. There are even myths that I have heard. Now, it's not a really common myth, but it's cultural myths that you have to dispel, that using a latrine will cause a woman to be barren. Now, we know that's not true, but that's a cultural myth that we have to dispel. And so we're working on that, and we're working on several culture changes, and we have all sorts of methodologies that teach people culture change. For instance, we will take a bottle of water and ask people who wants to take a drink of this bottle of water. And they all say, of course. Then we put a bit of fecal matter in the water, shake the bottle up, and ask them if they want to drink this, quoting, shitty water. And no one will drink that water. And yet, that is the water they are drinking on a daily basis. That is what is in the water. And that's when we show them those kinds of exercises, they begin to understand the importance of sanitation and clean hygiene, and good hygiene and clean water. Diarrhea is simply the cause in developing world countries is the transference of fecal matter into the food source. And that comes mainly by washing hands and keeping clean. And I'll get into that. I'll get into that process later. Now, one thing we do, we have to have an incentive to get people to even want to do this. Why should I do this? They don't really believe the results. So, but they all want access to clean water because, as I will again and explain later, they travel great distances to access water that is so dirty, friends. I'm telling you, it is so dirty you wouldn't put your hands in it. I mean, I wish this was filmed or video so I could show you the water. You would not believe it. You know, you would not believe. Take a look at Bill Gates' video, Decoding Bill's Brain, and they'll show you water sources in India that are just utterly disgusting. You literally would not put your hand in it, let alone use this as drinking water. And so what we do is that we say after a community or a school has been certified in WASH, and they've been certified in their sanitation processes and their hygienic processes and their ability to keep a clean water source, we then will drill a borehole, which is a well, and they have a well right in their community, which is, that is what they are all looking for. And you just can't believe the excitement. If you had an opportunity to go to Uganda and see the excitement of the people for getting a well or a borehole, it is just unbelievable. When we take donors there, and our donors get plaques that say their name, and often they attribute they dedicate the well to a person, a loved one, someone that has been deceased, and they get to go see their well. The village will show up with 25 to 300 people just cheering and filled with excitement, singing songs, doing dances, because they have water. That is what we're all about. Now, the WASH program begins with what's called a water user committee, and it's 11 people, with more than half are women, because women are the ones that are getting the water, using the water, and we want the key players involved rather than just men involved. And it begins with a water user committee that has all sorts of 11 people with all sorts of positions that are in charge of the water, that are in charge of the water, the entire water WASH process. So let me begin. That's an overview of WASH. Let me begin with, I'm going to talk about water, I'm going to talk about sanitation, and I'm going to talk about hygiene. Before I go any further, I just want to see, Paul may have questions that you may have. Do you have any questions thus far, Paul?
I'm just sitting here listening to this dumbfounded, and I got to be like most Americans listening today here. The idea that 800,000 children die, what we would think needlessly, because of diarrhea, as simple as that, which comes from something as simple as not washing your hands and not having access to clean water. I saw something somewhere, I don't know if this is true or not, more people have access to a cell phone in the world than they do to clean water.
I believe that's true, because everybody in the village, when we go to villages, and I'm talking remote villages, they have cell phones, which are, please understand, they're flip phones. They are not smartphones.
Yeah, right.
They don't have the internet service for smartphones, nor the money to purchase a smartphone, but they can get a cell phone, and just about everyone has a cell phone. So I would not at all doubt that statistic, that more people have cell phones than they do have access to clean water or access to toilets or hand washing.
Yeah.
So let's go on to water. This is what Wells of Life started with. We began providing water because we saw the unclean water that these communities were drinking, and our executive director changed his direction from building schools to drilling water wells. And the lack of access to clean water is just, it's the normal state. It is, we deal with Wells of Life. We work with only the poorest of the poor, the bottom billion. And believe me, when you go out to a well, you understand it's the poorest of the poor, because you are on back roads, dirt roads that are just entirely bumpy, rocky, filled with rain ruts. It's way back in the middle of nowhere. And those are the people that we have a heart for. And they are drinking this filthy water that I told you we wouldn't put our hands in. And they often have to travel 2, 3, 4 miles to get this dirty water. And they fill them up with these five gallon containers that are called jerry cans, weighing 40 pounds, and they will carry them back to the community. And this is called fetching water. And the access is far from the communities. Now, unfortunately, the majority of the people that fetch water are girls, younger girls, and women, which has a result, obviously, on their health. I mean, many of these women are carrying 40-pound jerry cans on their head. You can imagine that can't be very good for your spine. But the girls, the problem is, and this is with young boys too, there's a lot of young boys, so it's not only girls, but there are more girls than boys, that they miss school because they're out fetching water and they may have to do 2 or 3 runs a day and they're not in school. And so we don't have girls in school, and that's just that's one of the primary advantages of when we do provide this clean water, and the water we provide that we drill is closer to the community, and it is safe water that is not just that we go down to aquifer and assume that we're getting safe water. It is tested by national laboratories that are approved by the Ministry of Water and Environment of the country of Uganda. So we are definitely giving them clean water. There was something else I wanted to mention about water that was really important. Missing school, fetching.
Well, just the whole idea that you're turning people into beasts of burden. That's all they do. It must take how many hours, because these wells aren't nearby, how long does it take them to go there and back? How much of their day is consumed simply carrying water from one place to another?
I would say generally a half a day.
So they can't go to school.
No, they
they
miss
can't
school.
Do anything, yeah. But yeah. They're just fetching water.
Yeah, yeah, that is entirely true. You got it right on the money.
So how do you change an entire culture built this way? Is it simply freeing them up by getting a well, or will they instantly start washing their hands and drinking?
Well, see, that's a great question, Paul. You know what? We originally did until late last year, we just provided wells, and we thought we were doing the whole process.
Give them a well, they'll figure the rest of it out here.
But we found out sanitation and hygiene are so critical that by the time if they are not trained and they do not adopt the sanitation and hygiene processes, that by the time the clean water is used, it is already contaminated. For one thing, the jerry cans are not cleaned. You know, they're yellow cans, but there's black all over them, except for the communities that we have taught to clean the water cans. So they're getting contamination right from the beginning. And then they take this water and they take it back, and sometimes they'll put it into an unclean
a pan or a bucket or
something. A barrel.
Oh yeah, right.
A
cistern or something.
Yeah, cut back, and that can be unclean. And then there is no washing of hands. There's no sanitation, and they are transferring. From their hands are transferring after they've gone to the toilet in open defecation. They've contaminated the food that they're eating, and so they're once again susceptible to the diseases. Now I must admit that just providing water is not an ineffective method of.
It's a start.
Yeah,
right.
but it's a very effective method of providing clean water. It just doesn't take it all the way as far as we would like to take it, and that's why we've adopted this sanitation and hygiene.
So how do you get them to change their habits?
Well, that was what I said. We teach them, like, you know, asking them to drink the fecal water. You know, we have several different processes like that we use all along the way to show them and teach them how they need to do it. Now, let me go to the next one. I talked about water. I want to talk about sanitation. It is the common open defecation is the common practice. Now, the problem with open defecation is that the fecal matter will seep through the ground and end up settling in the aquifer.
Exactly. That's what I was going to get at. If you just poop all over the place or pee all over the place, doesn't it sink down into the water table?
Exactly. And so that is why we actually, in order to receive a certificate of a clean household, of a wash a wash-ready household, you have to build a latrine. And we teach them to build the latrines. They build the latrines themselves. The latrines are required to have huts. They are required to have separate latrines for men and women and visual blockage where people can't see you inside the latrines. And that, I thought that would be a major issue, that people would be reluctant to go through that much work. But that has turned easy. We have had tremendous success at people building latrines and building these
separate areas, right?
Separate areas, so we don't have contamination that is going down into the aquifer.
So the obvious question is, why have they never done this before? Don't they see the connection? Don't they understand where the germs and the everything come from?
See, Paul, you know what you're thinking like?
Thinking like an American.
You're thinking like an American, yeah. And that's the one thing. That's the one thing that I've learned from international travel is that I have to quit thinking like an American, and I have to think like a culture, because this is what a culture. They've been doing this for the reason they don't think about it. They've been doing it for hundreds of years. It is part of the culture. This is part of the way of life. This is the way we do things. And it is not the way we do things here in the United States, so it becomes incomprehensible that we would, you know, spend our lives. I mean, we wouldn't even, you know, we don't ever need to openly defecate unless
we're... Just think of this. I have a 5-year-old grandson now. Would I ever allow him just to go poop or pee in the backyard? I mean, that's laughable. I mean, it's the first thing you teach is a potty train them.
Yeah.
And you're constantly on them to, you know, do it right, wipe yourselves, flush the toilet, all these things, and wash your hands. I mean, we're just always on our kids. That's just the way it is. But you're saying they don't think of any of that because they've never done that.
No, but once we train them, and once we, it's called sensitization, once we sensitize them to the issue, then moving to mobilization, doing something is really, with latrines, it's really quick. They get that. They get the understanding, and they get the understanding that the fecal matter is contaminating the aquifers that they're drinking the water out of, so they're not getting as clean a water as they should be getting. And they're very, and I'm finding that they're very responsive, that our people that we work with are very responsible. The people we serve are very responsible in building latrines, and so that has been...
Now, what about their animals? They live intertwined with all their animals, too, the pigs and chickens and cows and whatever else they use to sustain themselves.
Well, they are far enough away from the water source. They keep those away from the water source. The families are doing this right near their homes, and so it's too close to the aquifer that they're using. So this is further away from the
So once you have a latrine, now what about washing their hands? Do they have a sink? Do they have anything there?
You're getting ahead of me just a bit here, because that's coming next in hygiene. But the key here with sanitation is keeping the water source clean and sanitary. And that, you know, you even said about wiping. They don't have toilet paper. There's no such thing as toilet paper. So they have special leaves that they use, and they have it hanging in every latrine is a branch with several leaves, and they use leaves to wipe themselves.
Right.
Because they can't get nor afford toilet paper.
I let that image sink in a while here. I can't even picture that.
Yeah. Okay, so sanitation is not it's about primarily open defecation and building latrines, but it's also the people in charge of sanitation are also responsible for keeping the well site sanitary, keeping it clean, the well site clean, free of dirt or any kind of contamination. That at the well site, and they will inspect jerry cans and make sure everybody is keeping their jerry cans clean so they're not dumping clean, safe water into unclean, unsafe containers. So the sanitation goes that far, and we're getting excellent responses from that. We just, on our last trip in August 2019, we visited several villages, WASH villages, that are in the process of getting certified, and it was just amazing how clean and how sanitary everything was. It was night and day compared to a village that has not gone through the WASH program.
Is there a pushback? Is there a tribal elder that fights this? Are there misbeliefs that
of
keep
course.
Them?
Of course.
Superstitions or whatever?
Yeah, well, it's that is one of our... See, we have learned our process. We don't just go into a village and just start. We invite ourselves in to begin with, and then they invite us to follow up. They're the ones that say that we want to follow up. And so we begin with leaders. We begin with, it would be kind of like a mayor of the area. It's called an LC3, and it's Local Council 3. And we begin with them. We begin with the chief and with the, and then we get with the most persuasive individuals in the community, because there are individuals in every community, in every society. You have individuals that don't have rank or title, yet they're the most influential people in the community.
Yeah, everybody looks up to them. Everybody listens to them.
And
so
those are the people we get. We get their buy-in first. We get them in it, and so they will then... they will then encourage the rest of the people, the remainder of the people, to follow this. And then after that is where we set up our water user committee. Now, before we go on to hygiene, I think it's our normal time. I think we should take a brief break.
Okay, let's do that. And we'll come back and talk about hygiene, which we take for such granted here and which is so critical there.
Careful your question. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges. You're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And I want to welcome my special guest, which is me, and producer Paul. And we are talking about the crisis of diarrhea and infant mortality, and that more children are dying of diarrhea than just about any other disease in the world. We have 2,200 children a day dying from diarrhea. That's about worldwide. It's about 800,000 children. And we work, Walls of Life works in Uganda, and we're talking about our process of how we try to alleviate or really eliminate this problem with contracting diarrhea. So the next thing, we've talked about water and sanitation, in which they're moving well. The next thing that is very important in this WASH, which is water, sanitation, and hygiene, is the hygiene aspect. Hand washing is the number one issue that we have to deal with. We find, I read a statistic that said 47% of all the people that contract diarrhea comes from failure to wash hands. 47% comes simply from the failure to wash hands.
So the first half is getting the clean water to them, drilling the well. The second half is learning them to keep the water clean and the water supply clean, don't allow all this human defecation urine to go down into the water supply. And you think that's problem solved, but it's simply
It's not.
Yeah.
The problem is not solved. The problem lies in we build these stations outside of the latrines, hand washing stations, and it's a very simple station that's set up with wooden sticks, and it's really great. And we teach them how to wash hands, and they push this little lever down, and water will come out of a gallon container, and they wash their hands all the way up to their elbows, wash their hands really, really well, and they are then able to go eat, breastfeed, do any of the kinds of things with children that they need to be doing with children or with food sources, because if they don't do this, that fecal material that comes from even using a latrine, even if they use a latrine, that fecal material is still on their hands as they've wiped with leaves, and it's transferred to the food. And the mothers that are cooking, it can be transferred to all the food, or individuals that are eating and they're eating out of the same source will be in danger. Now, this is what has surprised me. I thought hand washing would be easy, and as I'm learning this.
That's just a habit. You would think you just have to get people used to doing it.
Yeah, well, get them used to doing it in the United States.
Right.
How many people actually wash their hands and in toilets in the United States? Well, and I think it's really funny that I said, you know, someone has said, well, it looks to me like the majority of people do it, and I don't find the majority. I would say 50%.
I'm going to watch next time I'm in the bathroom here in the building and see how many people just quickly get up and go. There are a lot of people that do that. Surprise me.
You know, I think the real test would be if you could put a hidden camera and see how many people do it if there's nobody in the toilet. If there's somebody in the men's room, they're going to wash their hands. If there's nobody there,
they're out.
They're out of there. They don't need to do this.
Well, in restaurants, having worked in restaurants, owned some restaurants, oh my goodness, we're always harping on that, you know, wash your hands. It's everywhere. Wash your hands. And not just the law, it's common sense.
Yeah. So this has been the most difficult activity we have found to get people to use, and we do all sorts of sensitization, all sorts of education, and showing them how to do it, but it is still the most difficult. Yet it is perhaps, you know, I could be wrong if I say the most essential, but it's up there at the top of the most essential activities.
Sounds like half the problem isn't just the, you know, half the problem is getting them the water and keeping it clean, and the other half is getting them to not contaminate it themselves.
Yeah. But they will not receive a certificate of a WASH certificate that they are a WASH compliant household. They will not receive that certificate, and if the households don't receive the certificate, they don't get a well. So that's the incentive. That's what drives them to do it, because they want a well in their community. And they can't get a well until we get a very large, over 90% commitment to certificates of completion. We're looking for 100%, but, you know, we take 95, and we will.
So that's interesting. I thought you just went and found a village, drilled a well, left. Now you're saying we find a village, invite ourselves in, and they want what we offer because they don't have to go so hard to get the water. And you won't build it until you prove that they know how to use it and
exactly.
protect it?
Exactly. That's the incentive. You have to have an incentive to get people, you know, for such major culture change, there must be some incentive for such major culture change. But this will completely change the longevity of life, because, you know, another high-risk area, we have children that are high-risk area. Now, there's may not be that many people over 70, but people over 70 are also a very high risk too.
Well, because they can't take
dehydration.
Dehydration.
Right? Yeah. Now, with the hygiene is not only hand washing, but we also talk about creating hygienic households. So that is clean kitchen areas, and clean rubbish burning areas where they will get rid of their contaminated air materials, and also building drying racks. That we have them build drying racks so when they wash their dishes are not put on a towel on the ground. Their dishes actually have a clean drying area, so the dishes are clean. So we go that far. And then another thing that we do for hygiene that's very important is we build private bathing areas. Now, these are not like showers or anything. These are tubs that are filled with water, and they wash themselves in these tubs, but they're naked, and women don't want to be naked in the open. That, and neither do men, but women especially. And, you know, we're talking potential sexual abuse, and we don't want anything to do with that, so we build these private bathing areas as well. So if we put all this together, Paul, if we have good sanitation, no open defecation, so the aquifers are not being contaminated, if they're using latrines, and if they're washing hands and using these clean kitchen areas and drying areas, then once we provide safe water, once we give them that is nationally certified clean water, having gone through a laboratory and run probably 20 different tests of possible contaminants for a water or viability of the drinking water. And once that is passed, then we know we're giving them clean water. We will remove the vast majority of infant mortality deaths. And that number of 20% will drop radically. And that's why we have Wells of Life has moved to from a well drilling organization to an organization that is focused on WASH, that's focused on providing, we want to save lives. And so it's because of the cost involved, we will not be drilling as many wells as we once drilled, because it is a 6 to 9 month process to go through WASH. This is not a 3 week process. This is a 6 to 9 month process that involves continual monitoring afterward, that we continually go back, monitor, see how they're doing. But if you're talking about a culture change, even 6 to 9 months is relatively a short time. But you're talking about the way people have lived for hundreds of years. This is what we do in the very rural communities, and saving the lives of people that don't even know exist, the poorest of the poor, or it's called, you know, in the circles, it's called the bottom billion, and that's what we work with. I don't think I personally have ever participated in anything more important than this. I think. The gifts that I learned in business, in ministry, in consulting, in coaching, all of this, and I've always been a philanthropist, and so this is, I feel like this is what I was created to do, is to get this going.
Well, because you contributed before, but now you're changing. There's a big difference between giving somebody something and making an impact, a direct impact.
Yeah. And that's the other thing that, you know, I'm obviously going to encourage our listeners to check out Wells of Life, because it's one of those deals that's really funny, that's really not funny, but it's one of the great health problems of the world that is truly, we have the technology to fix it. We have the technology to do something about it. It's not like cancer or something that we're still looking for the technology.
AIDS or malaria or
right.
other sorts of
well,
things.
Well, AIDS, I mean, a lot has been done for right. AIDS, obviously, and malaria. But
we sometimes think of a disease and we think we can find the cure, then that's it. That one's gone. White polio, that one's gone.
Yes.
Whereas it isn't just enough that they don't have access to clean water. They don't know how to use clean water. They don't know how to keep the water clean. And so you have to change their life. First, you have to give them something they don't have, and then you have to teach them how to use it.
Well, you know what's really, you know, as you say it that way, you know what's really interesting is that there is another company that we work with, Life Water, and all they do is wash while we were doing wells. And they kept telling us, they kept telling us, you guys, the wells are not, the wells by themselves are not doing it, but it took us 2 years to finally make this,
right.
to make this
Cause we're
culture
Americans.
Change.
We want to just go in and fix, well, give me the easy answer. Need some wells, just go drink some things, drink a hole, water comes up, next, problem solved.
Yep. And I am, you know, we are very grateful for Life Water, which is a wonderful organization and does a lot with WASH, but they only do WASH. And we are now, Wells of Life is now focusing, we're looking at 2020 of focusing on WASH only and restoring non-functional wells. So there's a lot of, not only Wells of Life wells that happen to be non-functional because they just, all wells, you know, require maintenance, but all wells drilled, even by other drillers, we're taking a look at those, and we want to do 70 of those per year. So it will still be, we will still reach our 100 well sort of goal that we have every year, but it's just a different approach. But back to the original question, it is funny that you say they had to go through a culture change. Wells of Life had to go through a culture change,
right.
But Wells of Life is now fully committed to WASH and thinking that is going to, or knowing that will prevent the deaths of tens or hundreds of thousands of children under five. And you know, just let me also mention that we're not, we focus on death, but you know what is also the result is stunted growth.
Oh,
is
right.
whole lifestyle. You know, we're talking people that may, children that may live, but they live, you know, really poor quality life. And this is also enhancing the quality of life, which I think is very important as well. It's a big time deal. And so I want to thank everybody for giving me time to sort of rant on about this thing that I am so passionate about. And
how do people get in touch? How do they contribute? How do they become a part of this? Let's make it a movement, not just your personal passion story.
That was my very next sentence. Thank you for asking. I just did want to say this is why I'm working with Wells of Life and why I do all that I can, and I really want to encourage all of our listeners to visit our website, wellsoflife.org. Find out what we're doing, and we have a new website coming up in the next week or two that's going to be just fabulous, and it will show you what we're doing and why, and it will guide you to how you can help. And you can help by as easily as joining Water Warriors, which is $1 a day. And, you know, it may not seem like much, but you know, you get a few thousand people that are doing $1 a day. You know, we can do a lot because our cost, quite frankly, our cost for a well, to drill a well, is $6,000. And that's very, very inexpensive, because it will serve 1,000 people, and we are working on a 20 to 25 year model that it will serve people that long as we're keeping it maintained.
Where else do you get that kind of bang for your buck?
Oh, let me get onto that in a minute. But the cost for the well is $6,000, but the cost for wash, and wash is primarily labor intensive. You know, there's not a lot of hard costs for us in wash, because the community builds the infrastructure around it. But with the labor costs, the number of people that we have on the ground doing the work is about $6,000 per well. So now we're looking at $12,000. But for $12,000, I mean, still, you're changing the lives of 1,000 people, and you are allowing people to live with a higher quality of life. And you have to do is see the pictures of the people.
Without
it's amazing.
The constant fear of death, without the constant drudgery of dragging water over many miles.
Oh, those horrible things. And
freeing them up to study and learn and do other things and be productive and everything.
You know, I think I told the story one time when we were with Nick, that I was at a village by myself and working with the people and talking about wash, and I asked people to raise their hands if anybody has had diarrhea or faced waterborne diseases, and 100% of the people raised their hands. 100% of the people have faced this issue. And then the noticeable results of after wash is fabulous. You know, you have so many fewer people raising their hands that have problems with it. If they follow the wash protocol, we will eliminate by 70, 80, 90% of the problems that we have with infant mortality and with the quality of life of people.
Doesn't require a scientific breakthrough, doesn't require billions of research.
No.
It's doable today.
It's doable. That's the thing that's so frustrating. It's doable. The only issue is money. I mean, it really, and it's quite common in the United States that most of the money given in the United States is given to the United States, which I have no problem with whatsoever, but only 3.4% of the money donated in the United States is donated for international causes. And I think we could probably do a little better than that without suffering our need for our own people.
Well, because we're not asking for a lot.
Yeah.
You're not asking for billions per village. You're asking for 6,000 to build a well and 6,000 to train them how to use it for life here.
That's, yeah.
For 1,000 people for 10, 20 years, that seems like a pittance.
Yeah.
A simple sum.
Thank you for saying that, but I think that. So I really would like to encourage people to check it out and see what they can do to help, because once you see these people, once you see the people that are impacted by it and see their happiness at clean water and their happiness of children living, mothers not having to go through a child death. I mean, and they can go through several children dying. I mean, it's just the impact on a mother is just amazing. So whatever you could do to help, boy, we would appreciate it. And I want to thank you also for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.